and Gunnish Cheesh for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. When a cooperative extension agent elsewhere in the country does community outreach, they take their show on the road, not something that you can do here in Southeast Alaska, unless maybe you travel on the Marine Highway, which is kind of what Sarah Lewis does every summer. She loads up her family's 36-foot trawler, the Junie Belle, and navigates her way through the Inside Passage, stopping in communities along the way. And Sarah Lewis is here with us now. She's the Associate Professor of Extension in the Home Health Family and Community Development Program. So, Sarah, I imagine that things are getting pretty hectic for you right now. And I have to ask you, when do you take off and where is the first leg of your journey?
I will be leaving on May 20th. And so I assume you talked earlier about that I'm going on the Maritime Extension project with Cooperative Extension, where I go on my own boat through Southeast Alaska. This first trip that I'm going on, I'll be going to Wrangell, Petersburg, and Cake, and then coming home to Juneau at the end of that. And so I'll be teaching in those three places. And then later on in the summer, I'll be going to Hoonah, Gustavus, Pelican, Haines, and Skagway. But I hope to have more information about that in the future.
So how are you packing up and what are you packing? And how big of a project is that?
Well, so the reason that I started doing it, but there were many reasons, but one is because I have to travel with a lot of equipment. So canners, pressure canners, they're big and heavy, and water bath canners are light, but they're big, and dehydrators and a smoker and all these things that I could be traveling with to teach with. And some locations that I go to may have some of those that I can use, but not always. And so, one, traveling with all of that equipment to do the teaching requires a fair bit of space. But when trying to travel with that kind of stuff by ferry or by plane, including my ticket, it's pretty expensive. And so the solution of going on our own boat actually was one of those things that solved multiple problems at once. We could have room for all of my gear, and I can go to, you know, 3 to 5 communities for the price of one, basically, because I'm just going for the, you know, the price of diesel fuel to get to the communities.
So tell us about the Junie Belle, and how did your trawler get that name? I like that name.
Well, yes, I don't know. I don't know. It had that name before we got her. That was actually the boat that I did the Maritime Extension Program on last year. And this year, we're actually going to be on a new boat called the Pacific Sapphire. So who knows how these boats get their names, but I am one of those that kind of feels that the name is part of the spirit of the boat, and you should learn the personality of that boat with that name and not try to change it. But I also did love Junie Belle, and the Pacific Sapphire now sounds like a cruise ship, but she's you know, just a good cruising trawler.
So how do you prepare for this? What do you pack, and how long does it take you to get ready?
Oh, it takes months. I mean, with all of the planning in each of the communities and working with folks to learn what classes would be most of interest to people in the communities, about, I base it on what they harvest in those communities, both from garden and wild harvest. I base it on whether they have a farmer's market and whether they want to have more instruction on, how to start a cottage foods business or other food entrepreneurship. And then coordinating with local folks on the ground there who can help me with what kitchens should I use, et cetera. So there's all of that planning that goes into it. And then there's, you know, there's the packing up of the boat and the, you know, the shakedown cruise and all the stuff that we Southeast Alaskan boaters really, you know that we need to do each season when it comes to just getting out on the water and safely cruising around Southeast.
So how unique is what you do in terms of the rest of the country? I mean, it sounds pretty interesting. And I can't imagine that anybody else in the lower 48 would have to do this.
It's hard there. I don't want to say that there's nowhere else. Maybe there is. I was just thinking to myself, like the bayous or something, who knows? But it is interesting when planning this trip and working with the university to figure out how to, you know, pay for the fuel and things like that. University of Alaska Fairbanks does have policies about using your own boat. I mean, there's a process for being allowed to use your own boat. There's a process for you being allowed to use your own airplane if you are traveling for work. So Alaska, you know, we've got some different things, different challenges than other folks. And I would hazard a guess that I'm probably the only person who travels for, you know, 2 to 5 weeks at a time by boat. But there may be someone else out there, you know, in the Great Lakes or something like that, that might travel by boat periodically.
Well, it certainly is interesting. And yeah, I just have to kind of get a sense of what a day in your life is like once you arrive in town. So pick a village, pick a community, and paint a picture for me as you pull up and what happens after that.
Yes. So we always call ahead to let the, you know, harbor master know we're coming, the smallest place or the largest place, so that we have an idea of where to go. But pretty much every small boat harbor has room for us. And so we really like, you know, harbor life. But then comes the process of unloading all of the gear. This year, I'm going to ask my husband to try to estimate the weight of how much gear I'll be unloading. But then it needs to, you know, go down the dock on up whatever ramp there is. Sometimes it's actually stairs and not a ramp, which is especially interesting. So, and then we have bikes with trailers, and we can usually get some assistance from someone local with a truck for sure, because that's one of the things that is the best thing about these trips is every single community. I don't go to a community unless I've been invited. That's one really important thing. I'm there because people want me to be there and have either invited me or, you know, have actively asked me to be there. And, you know, the welcome. The welcome and the help and the interest in us being there is, you know, it's really, you become part of the community for a couple of days, and it's really a lovely thing. But yeah, there's a lot of gear being schlepped around on bikes and in trucks and stuff like that.
So when you write your memoirs years from now and in your retirement, give me a story from one of these communities about one of your unusual experiences as an extension agent.
Well, what's so funny is probably some of the experiences would seem unusual to others, but it's hard for me to pick one out because they are, you know, a rhythm is created. And I think that's one of the things in Southeast, if you spend a lot of time in boats, whether you're, you know, fishing commercially or whatever, and you go into the small communities, there's a rhythm to life in different communities, but you do actually need to learn the rhythm of each community. And so that's something that I think a lot of people don't always realize, that you may be going to two communities that seem demographically like they might be similar size-wise, location, different types of buildings, but each community will have a completely different rhythm of life. And so expecting any of them to be like another, that is one of the biggest mistakes that you can make. And so, you know, sort of celebrating and enjoying each community and, you know, needing to be flexible to match their rhythm is very important.
So I imagine that you learn as much as you teach sometimes in these communities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I come with a lot of gear, and I come with science, you know, scientific facts, and I come with some, you know, practical skills and things like that. But and a lot of those can be broadly used for different types of food, you know, but the local knowledge about what grows best, what you harvest at what time, the ways that those communities have used those foods for time immemorial or recently is something that, you know, I come without any preconceived ideas about what recipes we might do or what questions might be asked. And yeah, I learn all kinds of things, especially about the food ways of each community.
So again, I'm going to ask you, paint me a picture of a class with you. I mean, what are you doing? Where are you at? I know it varies from community to community, but pick one.
Sure.
Are you on the dock?
So in cake. No, I'm not. So in the pandemic, I have had to teach a bit outside, but I do associate my classes with an indoor kitchen, usually one that, if we can go inside, it has a community room. So in cake, I will be teaching at the Nest Community Center, which has a beautiful little commercial kitchen and a large sort of open common space and an outdoor space where they also have their community garden. So last year, I set up my tents outside of the Nest, and I had three sort of, you know, market tents. And I had, because I had to be outside because of the pandemic, I had a little outdoor kitchen set up and a, you know, a crab cooker and a propane stove and a little, you know, portable whiteboard. And they brought chairs out and we learned out there. And then, and so I would teach a lot of the, you know, sort of the lecture part, if you will, the science and things like that. And then we get everybody cooking. That's one of the goals of my classes is everybody getting their hands in it and filling jars and cooking and cooking different recipes and then canning and pickling and dehydrating so that people can have samples to take home. And this year I may be able to be indoors a little bit more. It's going to depend on each community. And but I'm prepared to teach outside again. But really, yeah, it's a hoot. It's a lot of fun. And the tents, of course, are very important because you can never depend on a clear day. So we do our best to stay warm and dry and teach and learn.
So since the pandemic, we have seen bare shells from time to time due to supply issues in communities all over Alaska. Do you think, especially in these smaller Southeast communities, that there is more need for learning the things that you teach?
There has been food security issues of different types are a constant issue in all remote locations, you know, and Alaska has a lot more, you know, Southeast Alaska is the one I am most familiar with, but throughout Alaska, we've got lots of remote communities, and anytime it's remote, you've really got to think hard about the various ways that you're going to feed your family. And it's not just because the shelves might be bare because a barge doesn't come in, but it can also be the price fluctuations can be really dramatic when you're having to ship things that far. So being able to freeze things, being and have them frozen in such a way that they last, that you don't waste anything, and being able to can so that you can have things on a shelf without having to use any energy. So if your freezer fails, you've still got shelves full of home canned foods. So, you know, adding the food preservation to all of the food harvesting and growing methods that are used throughout Southeast, adding the food preservation to that is actually critical throughout most communities in Southeast Alaska. Even if the shelves are full, those shelves may be very expensive. There might be very expensive food on them. So being able to weather the various storms of, you know, whether it's literal storms like weather or economic storms, preserving your own food is a really important skill to have.
Well, I remember when you initially talked about this year's tour, you had put out a call from those communities to make suggestions about workshops. And so did you hear from them? And are there some things you're doing as a result of that call for ideas?
Yes. So one, you know, using cake as an example again, I'll be doing some relatively standard food preservation classes in that, but the goal in CAKE is that they are wanting to train up some food preservation educators. They're wanting to get some more local folks trained to teach each other, so to have some local expertise. And so that's one thing, for example, is setting up the classes in such a way that they're not just teaching people how to do it, but it's like training the trainers. So doing a little bit of that. Petersburg, my classes there are going to be coordinated time-wise with the farmers market, and so focusing on food entrepreneurship while I'm there. But a lot of the classes are just kind of broadly interesting. I just don't have enough time to teach everything, and so having people narrow it down to, you know, fermented vegetables, and typically everybody wants canning. But then maybe focusing my classes on what they harvest locally. So if apples are a big thing, we'll, you know, have a class on apples. If bull kelp is an important thing that people preserve, I'll do classes that are focused on bull kelp. So that's how I kind of tailor it to each community.
All right. Well, bull kelp and algae and all kinds of things from fish to berries. I'm sure that you have a rich experience out there when it comes to food, don't you? And, I want to thank you so much for being here with us to let us do a little armchair traveling with you to see what you're going to experience this summer. So safe travels on your journey.
Thank you.
All right, Sarah Lewis, who is with the Southeast Cooperative Extension Service, thanks for coming to share all that you know and all that you do. It's pretty exciting.
Thanks so much, Rhonda. Take care.